It's up to you, New York, New York.
On 11:16 SEN, Robert Shaw, the New York Minute Burgers, Winnie Pons, and now in Williamstown, voted top 10 burgers by the Herald Sun this year. On 11:16 SEN, Ashley Brown from AFL Media for AFL Record for Kids.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Now, Shorey, I said you're nervous because I'm taking the well-trod line, or well-treaded, whatever the word is, that all Essendon people despise Hawthorn, and there is an inbuilt rivalry that overpowers even. But it's not true, is it? You like
not
them.
Not correct from me. I admire them. I like them. That is not in my mindset. I tell you why I like them, because our competition's about equalisation, and we're taxing football departments. We're trying to move the bottom up. We're trying to move the top down to the bottom, aren't we, Brownie? That's the basic philosophy. The more you have in your football department, the more resources you have, the higher you are taxed. What system's that called? That's the
equalisation.
Socialist system.
Well, socialist, yes.
Yeah.
And any given weekend, they call it.
I love the best being the best. Really doesn't worry me too much. I don't like elitism. I wouldn't call them elite. But they've worked very hard because, as you know, only 10 years ago, they were 15th on the ladder. So they've got off their backside and they've done things to improve their football club. And so they get so good, they get a knock on the door and say, we're going to take a bit of that and that. And they keep up there. So eventually it's going to force the poorly run clubs or the poorer clubs to move. Whereas everyone's, the system wants them moving backwards. And there are clubs, as we see, Mark's club, the Western, that are getting off their backsides and doing things and making things happen, putting programs in place to improve their football clubs and moving up 3, 4, 5 places on the ladder. So I like it when I see really good teams and particularly really well-run football clubs get what they deserve. And they mightn't win it yet, might they, mate? They might get touched up. But at the moment, it was very enjoyable to watch them play football.
Just a very quick interjection, then back to you, Brownie. I did mention Scott Arnold was 5 under today. He was actually playing the 13th, and he birdied that one as well. He's now 6 under for the day, and it's an amazing round of golf he's putting together. 5 under for the tournament, and he's up to a tie for 36, which is 42 places better than at the start of today's proceedings. So another Australian having a great tournament. We'll keep a close eye on Scott Arnold.
And the wind blows at St Andrews the longer the day goes on as well. So
yeah, it's not going to blow the 35 ahead of him off.
But you know he will keep
going up. Yeah.
Yep.
That is a very good observation. They are predicting wind there this afternoon. Of course, it's been a strange tournament. There's been no wind for 3 days, and beautiful scoring. And then one of the days got called off because it was too windy. So anything can happen. At St Andrews, the home of golf. Now back to football, and Brownie, 9-4-2-9-11-16. What could go wrong to Hawthorn to really derail the juggernaut? They're into even money to win the flag. They have just dispensed over the last 2 weeks. They have annihilated the two teams that most people instinctively would suggest with the two teams to challenge them. Fremantle because of their ladder position, and they're a pretty strong Ross Lyon unit, and Sydney, last year's grand finalists, and they're the team that defeated them 3 years ago. West Coast are respected, but with, you know, when it comes down to it, as great as they've been this season, surely those loss of key defenders will count again them. Now Richmond's being plucked from the ruck as the best of the rest, and I don't think Hawthorn are quaking in their boots, even though they've lost to Richmond now and then. So 9-4-2-9-11-16. What stops Hawthorn? Do you know, Ash Brown?
Do I know what stops Hawthorn? A preliminary final might stop them because that's about been their Achilles the last couple of years, though.
Yeah, didn't I just read 5-5-3? Are they? Is that, that's points, folks, not goals.
Yeah, that's right. The preliminary final's been a nerve state for them. What stops them? I mean, a lot of Hawthorn people would have said that Jared Roughead was their most important player. Well, they put paid to Freo by whatever they did without him. So they've even been able to compensate for them, for someone who's just so important to their structure.
Yeah.
Well, injuries could derail them. What they have done, Hawthorn.
Who's injury? Who, if two players got injured, and that can happen, which are the two players that could be the ones that would, obviously at least
Brian Lake is a player.
9-4-2-9-11-16. Two injuries. Pick them. Which two?
Well, Brian Lake would derail Hawthorn. I think he's really important to their structure. Mitchell, I mean, he's been sublime for so long. If he was out for a considerable period, how would they stack up with a guy like Mitchell?
You touched on it, Mark, but you glossed over it pretty quickly.
What's that?
You talked about Fremantle, you talked about Sydney.
West Coast.
The reason West Coast can beat them is they've got six forwards. Now, Mark Robinson rang me about our show. We spoke 2 weeks ago about analysing opposition sides and all that sort of thing. And Robbo rang me a bit cold, having listened to our show, and said, how would you beat them? I said, I don't work in the system anymore. There's people that are full-time that are watching these blokes all the time. And one of the things I did raise is every time... I said emphatically, you cannot beat Hawthorn if you don't match them 6-for-6 in their forward line. If you allow one of them, and I'll give you a name, if you allow Birchall to play free, if you allow Lake... Gibson to zone off, right? Or heaven forbid, Sean Burgon, you will not win. So with that simplistic logic, I thought, well, which teams play six forwards? And I tell you what the West Coast Eagles do. They don't do what Sydney do and play, for example, a McVeigh and a Parker at half forward flanks. Now they're midfielders. And then they push them up to the stoppages. Right, so they get additional numbers at the stoppages. Well, that's great, but Hawthorn can counter that with numbers also. And then you leave Burgoyne and Gibson free. I only watched that game on television. I think Lance Franklin was fantastic. He kicked three goals. He played on Lake and Gibson all night. Because what happens if Parker goes up the ground, right? Birchall will go across to Gibson's man and maybe play small or play tall. And allow Gibson free. They just move it around so they get the bloke that they want free and they're prepared to play short on height in some positions. So when Mark said West Coast, he just glossed over a little bit because he focused on Fremantle and Sydney. But this West Coast team with their midfield, get McGovern back in 4 weeks' time and have a real go at them with six forwards. I don't know if they play them. Do they have a run at each other before...
They haven't played yet.
What? There's some teams have played twice.
Yeah, no, Hawthorn, about 3 weeks in Perth on a Saturday night.
Oh, right.
That's why they're so good. They've had a soft draw. Let's go to Brian.
Anyway, Mark. Yeah.
Brian and Glenn Waverley. Join the discussion. 9-4-2-9-11-16. Won't all be about Hawthorn, but I've got some great SMSs to read out as to how to derail the Hawks. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening, guys. I just wanted to challenge what Robert said earlier about Hawthorn. Building a wonderful team and getting off their backside, unlike other clubs.
Yeah.
I just put it to you that Hawthorn were in a very enviable position of having a good team before the expansion teams came into the competition, which meant the rest of the clubs that were poor at that time didn't have the opportunity to draft. And so given that Hawthorn already had a strong position, they could pick the eyes out of other teams and pick up good players and still continue on their merry way. So... other clubs who were poor had no option but to moneyball players into their teams at best. And that's why you see such a gap. And that'll level itself out over time as we no longer have a challenged draft.
Yeah, I also said that 10 years ago they were abysmal. 10 years goes very quickly in football, and it's been a steady build based on what you said quite rightly, the ability to handpick and... get your Gibson and get your Burgoyne the next year, and then, okay, we're weak in the ruck, we'll go and have a look at Hale, we'll top up with, we'll get a Norm Smith medalist, so you're quite right. But all that's part of the package. They've also gone and drafted blokes like Isaac Smith right down the list from a North Ballarat. They've got some... Paul Polopolo. I'm not sure how many people had Paul Polopolo on their radar as a little nuggety inside mid at Norwood Brownie. So I can understand what you're saying, Brian. But look at the package and look at the path in the last 10 years.
The Hawks, when you put together a list, of course, one of the great one of the great challenges is as the side gets better and this team is the best, how do you fit them all in the salary cap? And Hawthorn have, it's not been fortuitous because they've developed players so well. They're a great development club. Some of their champs who you might have thought, well, how can you fit them all in on the list? Sam Mitchell would have started on a very modest wage, built up over time. But when push came to shove, probably was, you know, sacrificial of some of his money to stay the club that he loves, rather than start on 700,000 being courted by other teams. He worked up. Jordan Lewis would not have been on huge money to start off with, and that's a much better position to be in than, say, GWS may find themselves with big commitments to Cameron, and to keep their players. Everybody sees them as stars already. It's very expensive.
Yeah, James Frawley came in at the unders. I mean, he was offered significantly more money to go to Fremantle and, I believe, Geelong. But he looked at the situation and said, I'll go to Hawthorn, I'll take less. And, you know, Franklin's the only player, Hawthorn player who's left, who sort of wanted more money.
Yeah.
And took the big money elsewhere.
And left a nice room in the salary cap. And the notion that grand final in 2013 that was lost to Sydney was because of too much of a focus on Franklin is gains credence the more you see Hawthorn play without him. Let's go to Bob in Fremantle last on the chat about Hawthorn, and then I've got a couple of great SMSs as to how to derail them. Hello, Bob.
Good, fine. Just quickly on the Franklin thing, the same reason that the coach went over to, went over to America to talk him into staying for a year. I think he was pretty important to Hawthorn. But anyway, I digress.
I'm not saying he's not great and wasn't important to them. Just on that day, on grand final day, they started to really look for him and probably over.
Although he dragged them back in that game. The third quarter was outstanding.
I'm saying that he got them back into the game, and then by the end it was, just get it to Buddy, he's going to win us the game. And that didn't pay off. You had so much ball in that last quarter. There are other avenues to go. I'm just saying an observation. Back to you, Bob.
So basically, my view is the most important players in a team are the players that the structure can't do without, not necessarily the best player. So quite often, like Salwood missed last week, you can throw another midfielder. Pavlich, when Pavlich used to miss for Fremantle, when we were just going okay, you just write Freo off. And inevitably, you can check the stats, we'd get up and win. Pav was probably a little bit of, as you say, going through Pav all the time. You get goals from elsewhere if everything else is going forward. The player that Fremantle's missing, which is why I'll put a line through the Launceston game and suggest that Fremantle will go better, is Michael Johnson in the back. And it's very un-Ross Lyon-like, or it might be a bit of a Firthy with Lyon, but his game plan, like normally to say, he goes out, someone just takes his spot because it's all just about numbers and how you play. It just revolves around Johnson to the detriment of, forget, I mean, last year Johnson went out, McFarlane went out soon after, and everyone said it was the two big backs that went out. McFarlane, lovely fella. His kids go to my local primary school. Forget, anyone can take his spot. Silvani is fit. You know, he's a terrific player, but Johnson, the whole game thing revolves around him. If he's out 8 weeks, give him 10, because when he comes back, Fremantle is just a so much better side.
Yep, I agree. MVP. No question about that, mate. We've discussed that at length this year.
He's a swing man. He can play on a player, but he can be the loose man as well, Brownie.
Just one other, we go back to the earlier thing about the Hawthorn player. Here's a stat for you. Matt Spanger has played 22 games for Hawthorn, and they've won 21 of them. So I don't know how scientific that is, but that's a remarkable stat.
Well, that is the sort of inverse or exact opposite of those kids who played for Carey Grammer, I believe, on the weekend, Shorey, because Carey Grammer, they're not in your comp, are they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they won.
Yes, they won. They went down to Geelong and won.
First game in 3 years, apparently. And there were kids who'd played all 3 years, if you were a good year 10 footballer, played all three
years. Fantastic.
And this was their last game.
Right.
and they won a game. So they've played, and what? How many games do you play a season?
10 schools, so we're 10 games. We've played 8. There's 2 rounds to go.
Yeah, so there are kids who played around 20 to 25 and won 1 opposite to Spanger. Okay, this is how to defeat Hawthorn. Injuries, people pointed mainly to Luke Hodge as the key plank. Sam Mitchell, of course, very important. And Isaac Smith got a couple of noms, so he's certainly... Well, he's
I like that one.
He's everything, isn't he? His run, his kicking.
He can go forward.
Yeah, he's a beauty.
I know who was out in the weekend. Wouldn't like both of them to miss. There you go.
No.
Smith and Hill for me.
Yeah. So that's one way. A couple of injuries. Nobody wishes that on a team except people who don't like the team. Then Andy just said kryptonite. Well, we don't know whether kryptonite would work on these supermen, but I understand what you're saying. But I think the one that really hits the nail on the head, there is a way to absolutely derail Hawthorn. And Bucky got it 100% correct. Convince umpire Goldspink to come back and take up whistleblowing. Put him in a final. And Hawthorn, sayonara. A break. And when we come back, we'll keep on talking footy. 9-4-2-9-11-16. That game, of course, the showdown, will go down in history for all the right reasons and all the tragic background to it. We'll make it remembered forever. But as a game of football, and these two guys are the boys to talk to and listen to, it was an absolute ripper. So we'll be talking about that after the break.
The showdown with a difference. There it is. Siren. The Adelaide Football Club hold on for one of their best victories that means everything.
Well, there you have it. It was a Port Adelaide revival that almost got the side over the line, but in the end, for the impartials, and I've never really cared who wins a showdown, the right result. Not for the ladder, not for any other reason than the team coached by Phil Walsh fittingly won a game where all players were emotionally affected by the events that have transpired over, obviously, the event that occurred now over 2 weeks ago. But it was nice that the team that he coached won, and Scott Camporelli has been so, in doing a very difficult job stepping into those shoes, he has been so respectful, and quite rightly after the game was mentioning that this team have lifted and are inspired by what the legacy. Now, I'll put this to you, Robert. Last week they lose to West Coast, and people are suggesting that Adelaide are too emotionally torn to be able to play a meaningful end to the season. Have we changed our view this week?
I think it was always going to be the case that there was a... These are young men, Mark. They range from 19 to 30 years of age, and we spoke last year. Some of them would have experienced with their granddads and mums still alive and all that sort of thing. It may well be the first time that someone's close to them. They have experienced death, and so it would have been a real issue for them. They went out and tried, emotionally tried against West Coast, and I just think they needed to play football. So they come to training the next week, and it comes a bit more closer to normal preparation. They were playing Port Adelaide, so the relationship there has always been really competitive, super competitive, but there was a great affinity between the two sides, which I think allowed Brownie, the two sides, to attack the game and play the game in a really good spirit, hard-running, entertaining football, and maybe just a breaking of the emotional shackles to get out and play really good football. Adelaide played terrific footy, you know, as well as they played for quite some time. And then, of course, we had the Port Adelaide refuse to lay down and try and get back in the game. And apart from Matthew Broadbent, where was he kicking the ball in the last quarter? He got the ball in the middle of the ground and put it to the right of screen, deep to the pocket, where Adelaide would have said, you can have anywhere on the ground, but I want you to, if you choose a position to kick the ball for us, that is exactly where I would like you to kick the ball.
Yeah, I think the thing about the showdowns is every time you think you've seen the best showdown, it better one comes along, and you know, I thought nothing would beat the Monfries.
The Monfries
from a couple of years ago, yeah. And then along comes this game that actually beat it. So, I think getting out and playing. You know, they talked about perhaps it was a good thing for Adelaide last week to get on a plane, get away from it all, and focus on the game against West Coast. But given the West Coast affiliation to Phil Walsh, maybe that wasn't the best. Maybe a bit better off going to Sydney or Tassie or something for that first game. I think just being back at playing and to showdown was just made it probably a much more normal week for them, I think.
The game was played, of course, on Sunday afternoon. Do we ever have three games played at once? Or is the most you can have in the AFL today is two games played simultaneously?
Yeah, you never get more than three. Yeah, two games, is it?
94291116. I'd love the listeners to partake in this. 0433981116. That, I believe, on a call I took last night alerting me to this fact, so it wasn't something that I had considered at the time. I just said it was a brilliant game. That's the best game this season. That is the number one ranking game for entertainment. Just everything. I mean, the meaning is important, but the actual game lived up to the hype. We'll call it, for the sake of the argument, living up to the expectation. I think that's the number one game of the season. And is it there not a coincidence? Isn't it odd that at the same time there was another game being played, and I think I might be able to rank that as the worst game of the season?
You're not the only one who said it's the worst game of the season. Pretty much everyone.
I watched that game.
Everyone had the misfortune of watching it.
It today. Well, I didn't really. I fast forwarded.
You fast forward after quarter time.
What on earth were they doing? Those two teams doing after quarter time? And the first quarter, actually, Melbourne were full of purpose and Hogan really full of intent. Now, there were mistakes made, of course, by both teams. But if I was sitting in the first two rows of the MCG, I would have been very confident of four or five possessions. Oh, you only had to lean over. That game was never played down the middle of the ground. It was so frustrating. What is it, ultra-conservatism, Shorey, that takes teams like Melbourne and Brisbane when they don't have great confidence in their forward setup or in their ball movement, takes them wider and wider and wider, and it is played under, you know, it's played in the shadows of the grandstand. I could not think of a more annoying game.
Well, the thing was, the team that won the game, what was it, 8-4? Yes. Where a 19-year-old kid's kicked half the score.
Where five of those goals were kicked in the first quarter of the eight.
And the young full forward has kicked half their score. So your theory's right. One team had a certain amount of belief to go to their full forward. I didn't see this game, and because I was watching the other game. It's 14 degrees. It was played at the MCG. There's no breath of wind, and the sun's out.
Yeah,
I thought, Brisbane have gone down there. They've stacked the back line, right? Melbourne have won the ball. They've won the ball, and Roosie's done the same thing. So I had this mirror image of, not mirror image, I had this image of two sides playing with 32 blokes in the back half all day. It wasn't the case, was it, mate?
No, not particularly. There was just not much target hitting. And as I said, there was not enough taking the ball down the corridor for either team. Taking the risk and bringing the ball inboard, it was sort of, unfortunately. And Paul Roos...
Does it really matter for Melbourne?
Yes. Yes, it does. It does. They win a game, great. They're going to finish where? 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 15th, 14th. Their fans, it matters a lot, actually, I reckon, because if I was a Melbourne supporter, I'd be saying, if that's where we are when we're on top, if that's the football my team plays, when we've got the bottom of the ladder, Brisbane Lions, depleted again, 5-1 at quarter time on a perfect day at the MCG. If that's how we win a game of football, then, honey, where are the snow chains? Because really, why would you want, when you're on, if that's what you're like when you're on top, why would you want to go and watch them? And where is the belief in that group that they are headed for anything beyond what has been dished out in previous years, which is mediocrity, sometimes grave disappointment, sometimes pleasant surprise, but mediocrity. You know, they've really haven't aimed high and they haven't got high. And that's what I thought. That's what I saw in that game today, having watched it today in full.
Maybe they would. Yeah. They would look at it saying, well, we kept Brisbane, and I know Brisbane were a bit challenged in the key position, but kept Brisbane at 4 goals. We're building a team from the back line down. Back line's doing its job. The forward line will get there.
Has been a theme, I agree with Mark, has been a theme for a couple of years now.
Yeah,
get the defence right, hopefully get the stronger bodies into the midfield, and the last work in progress is our finishing and our forward entries in our development of our forward line.
Great, they get McStay under the, under wraps. There's no
one
else.
That's what I mean, Mark. Yeah.
What if they?
I'm just throwing up some counter arguments, but no, yeah, I'm saying it's a pretty ordinary day for footy.
Yeah, this is not a side that has not won a game of football. It's not Carey's school team. They beat Geelong and Geelong, and that day there was plenty of scoring done, and you couldn't imagine that Melbourne team slipping back to where they have slipped back with a couple of a loss. I think they played in Darwin after that, and they just gave nothing in the second half. And then to have Brisbane, hey, what have people done to Melbourne over the last 5 years when they've had them at their mercy? Well, they've done more than kick 3 goals in 3 quarters. Let's go to Luke in Mulgrave. G'day, Luke.
G'day, Fonny. G'day, Shorey.
G'day, mate.
I'm a Bomber supporter, so I'll just keep it sort of quick. But mine's more of a coaching cross. Breed of sports, question. I'm a basketball person through and through, but been following footy since I was born. I was just going to ask, I know that we look at coaching and outside coaching, but do you guys teach press breakers? Like, so if you've got a full field flood trying to keep the ball in the offensive area, do you talk about, like, Wolsey had the spread and all that sort of stuff? Do you guys teach that sort of stuff?
Me? With the kids I coach?
NFL coaching, sorry, yeah, at the top level. Hybrid, taking things from other sports, that's what I'm sort of getting at.
At AFL level?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, that's Clarkson has been enormous on, there wasn't even an article, Brandon, remind me how he's closely analysed lacrosse and the positioning.
He's looked at hockey, he's looked at lacrosse, he's looked at soccer, he's looked
And he's taken a bit about that, owning areas. You know, the zoning came in about owning areas. The press came in from, like, we've seen soccer, EPL, the really good sides push up and make it difficult for teams to transfer out of the back. The teams that sit off teams get destroyed now. So, yeah, that press up into the forward line to stop the back line distributing the ball is very much, I believe, a soccer trait.
I know.
It's a good call.
It's a great call, Luke. And you would have enjoyed Terry Wallace talking about that very topic last week on Halftime, even though Half wasn't, I think, hosting the program. He said that a lot of coaches, when the 2000 Olympics were held in Sydney, a lot of then AFL coaches made a beeline up to Sydney or down to Sydney, depending where they were based or across, to watch various sports. And he sat for three or four days watching hockey, because the setups of defensive movements and certainly the numbers game of getting people back is something that had been learnt from other sports. Australian rules football almost had a convention that players would play one-on-one and wouldn't leave their designated areas. A backman would never travel forward. And by watching other sports, and lacrosse was one, and hockey another, field hockey that is, they worked out, well, why wouldn't you go back and help your defenders if as a forward there's nothing to do? And so became presses and floods and everything we really don't like as much, but they got learned from other sports, I believe.
Terry Wallace, was a bit of a visionary in that area as well. He studied the other sports. One of the first to study more than most. Clarkson's probably now the lead in that area, but they all do their tours at the end of the year and they go off overseas. And
we got Ernie Merrick to the club because we toyed very early in the 2000s with zoning. We did it to a certain extent with half forward moving up to wing, and they sort of do that now. Wing to half back and the half back owning space.
What are some of the things
he talked about? He was great. He spoke to us about how to own areas and control dangerous areas on a soccer field, which we sort of toyed a bit with 10 or so years ago.
Think about this during the break, gentlemen, Ashley Brown and Robert Shaw, and please do as well. We've got some prizes to give away. I'll tell you about the sponsors after the break and give away some sponsors' product. But what have we got? Is there anything specifically in AFL football or in Australian rules that you could say, right, that has come from this sport? So thinking caps on, everybody. When we come back from the break, the aspect of the game and then the sport that it's come from. You'd be surprised to know that the Mance Pants ad is in fact an ad specifically and totally for motor cars. And everybody down at Mance Motors, Footscray, Melton and Bacchus Marsh, pants on and do great deals. These two boys in the studio have got their pants on and they are ready to tell us exactly what bits of our game, Australian Rules Football, were purloined from other sports. But Brownie will do it thanks to AFL Record for Kids. It's out in newsagents. It's more than just a footy record. And the reason it's more than a football record is because it was designed to aid reading. It was designed to have the kids doing maths and all these things, all the subjects and all the homework that they wouldn't normally do, they'll be doing sort of subconsciously, subliminally, because they love their if they love their football, because they'll love the AFL Record for Kids out everywhere where anything worthwhile is sold. And Shorey, they might not sell them at the New York Minute Burger franchise, but that place is a great place to get burgers now in Carlton. So let's go to Andrew in Roeville first, and then Matt in Malvern, who's got a sport that has influenced our own, and he's spot on. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, gents. How are you?
Very well. Go.
I've just got a couple of questions for you. The first one being, with the Richmond-St Kilda game yesterday, I think St Kilda's future is fantastic, given that Hugh Goddard will play centre-half back for the next 10 years and also McCartan up forward. So I think St Kilda's not too far away. They may be a couple of years away from playing finals. The other question I've got is, with Richmond, where do you think... I'll name three or four players and you can tell me where they fit within the squad going forward, leading into the finals. And they are Griffiths, Vickery, Shane Edwards, Chris Knight and Reece Conker. Where do you think they fit?
Well, Griffiths, Vickery and Riewoldt have formed what I think is their preferred forward line. We've discussed the three tools with either Griffiths or Vickery supporting Marrick in the ruck. I think we've nominated Edwards as their, and we spoke about it early in the show, important players. Even though they won, he's got to be in their one or two, if not in their best players, certainly they're one of their most valuable players. Conker's in the seconds, the VFL side at the moment. If he can get fit and into form, he could push himself onto that subs vest very, very easily. And I've forgotten the last one.
Well, Ellis. Which Ellis?
Which Ellis?
Corey Ellis.
He's a
beautiful kick of a football. Does he get it enough at the moment? Every time he touches it, it's gold. So if he could get himself up to 15 touches a game, he'd be a very, very handy player.
You wouldn't expect him to be playing in the finals unless there's an injury or two.
Yeah.
So that this year, his future looks assured. Thanks a lot for the call.
Well done.
Matt's in Malvern. Good evening, Matt.
Yeah, good evening, fellas. Sport, I think, has had a profound effect on AFL is Gaelic football. And I think if you look at the hybrid game that Gaelic football and AFL play every couple of years, the continuous nature of that game has been imparted on AFL as we see it today, especially the kick-outs from fullback, which seem to be not even waiting for the goal umpire anymore. And the rule changes, which try to encourage the continuous ball movement.
I think that's a great point. The greatest influence that Gaelic football has had on AFL is not with the players or the coaches, but with the rule makers who have had to create a game where the bump in the hybrid game doesn't exist. Apparently, in Ireland, there was great gnashing of teeth when a couple of their boys were ironed out. And it was going to be the next underarm incident, so they, rather than stand their ground, those coaches, the responsibility for making the rules for that game, sort of outlawed the bump and then thought that's maybe something we could do in the AFL. And I reckon if there are some rules you don't like in the AFL that have come in the last few years, they might have had their origins, or a couple of them, in Gaelic football or the hybrid version of.
certainly the bringing the ball back in quickly after play, something that the rule makers brought that in. It wasn't even necessarily a coach push, but that's a feature of Gaelic football.
How about tempo football? The slowing down, the chipping. How did we go from every mark meant something to now every mark barely every mark, almost every mark doesn't mean anything? I meant to say.
That's a soccer.
What
tactic.
Sport gave us that? Soccer. Yeah, I've got one. I've got another one.
Water polo.
Jared Neesham. Now
we didn't talk, did we?
No, Jared Neesham with his water polo background. Yeah. You know that.
Hold.
You know how they're all sort of.
Across, around.
Try to do that in a pool for 15 minutes and play fair. That is tough to do. Very tough to do.
So playing a high line in soccer is the same as the pushing press. Up in the forward press. Yeah. Do not allow teams to distribute the ball out of the front half. Keep them in the front half. That's definitely soccer. Is it basketball if you play?
I don't know what you can get from basketball. No. Basketball's too. It's
Scott Pendlebury plays football like basketball. Plays like a point guard, running plays almost. Yeah. He's got the ball. But another one is, you know, I mean, the huddle, the old Robert Walls huddle. There's elements of American football there with basically running routes and finding and the
set plays.
Yeah, set plays. That's an American football trait that's been brought in.
The one thing that our game has always had that other games would find, certainly in soccer, they wouldn't believe it. Our melees, our brawls, our, not the big hits, you know, but the coming together of people on a football field, it only happens on footy fields and on the ice, in ice hockey, I think.
What's interesting, though, you talk about what AFL could teach other sports is, I mean, people who've gone to, like Alistair Clarkson, you know, he told us that, so he travels regularly to, as they all do, to foreign sporting clubs. He said sports science and sports recovery in the AFL is so much more advanced than a lot of overseas sports. He said they won't come here to learn it. He says they probably should, because we are very advanced in a lot of areas of sports science these days.
We've got to take a break. Very quickly, Joe in Moorabbin, are you there, Joe?
Yes, I am, Mark.
The sport and what's it given
which
us?
Year this came in, but kicking backwards soccer.
Yeah, territory.
And across.
Territory used to mean everything in Australian rules football. Gubby Allen will forever be
pilloried
for kicking the ball across goal late in a game of football. Now you get pilloried and harangued if you kick the ball straight towards your own goals at any point during a game, unless you're having a shot at goal. Very good nomination, Joe. So good, we've got a prize for you. Joe, hang on to the line, because you, sir, are off to New York Minute Burgers for one of their magnificent meals. In fact, you could have more than one, because a $40 voucher will have you well fed.